Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
People often ask me, what's it like being an entrepreneur? How did you become an entrepreneur? How did you know that you were an entrepreneur? Sometimes you just follow fate. Sometimes you just fall into it. Sometimes you chase it down. It's interesting where we end up in our lives. You know, I never actually considered myself an entrepreneur in my life. I was just a hard worker. I just wanted to work. That's all I wanted to work, so I could get ahead in life. I remember watching friends that had these dead-end jobs. I remember a buddy of mine graduated from high school ahead of me. And I said, what are you doing? He says, I got a job at the liquor store. And I'm like, the liquor store. Okay. So I'm working on cars. I was a car guy. I'm always playing with cars and working with my buddy on cars. And one day I went to the liquor store to buy a soda because I don't drink. And there was my buddy behind the counter. And I go, so how's it going? He goes, great. I'm making like, you know, minimum wage. I think it was like $6 an hour at the time or whatever. And I felt for him. I thought to myself, I think the last job I did, I made several hundred dollars on, and it didn't take me but a couple of hours to do this, you know, this stuff with cars. It was a car thing. And so I remember thinking to myself, that guy is going to work a week to take a paycheck home that I just made that same amount of money in a few hours. And I thought, man, I could never have a regular job. I couldn't do it. So I just stayed with playing with cars. And then the next thing you know, I'm on television for some crazy reason. And the next thing you know, I'm working with all these big magazines. And it's interesting how if you just stick to what you love, all of a sudden things have happened without you really having your hand in it. Just your hand was at work while the mind was at ease. That's what my dad always said. An entrepreneur works hard, and while the hands are at work, the mind is at ease. And all of a sudden, here I am sitting behind this microphone right now talking to you folks about what it takes to be a success. So with that, I'm going to go right to our first guest, Tom Murray. He's the former CEO of Calvin Klein. And today we're going to talk about how he went from an oil rig to CEO of Calvin Klein. He can discuss his death-defying experiences working as a roustabout on an oil rig in Louisiana and how that job instilled the grittiness that it would take to serve him throughout his career at Calvin Klein. Now, I love, Tom, the fact that you were working on an oil rig, and how in the world, let me just hear your story, how in the world did you go from that to fashion and Calvin Klein? Give it to us.
I think I have to start before the oil rig to give you the complete story. I started working when I was 15 years old after school and during summers in men's clothing stores.
Ah.
And so I always had this love for apparel. So I'll go back to that. You know, that's really kind of how it all started. And in the oil rig was a summer job from college. My father was a executive for a company called Phil's Petroleum Company, and he was friendly with a guy named Howard Barksdale, who was the CEO of Kerr McGee, who owned all these oil rigs out in the Gulf of Mexico. So it got me this summer job working 80 miles out in the Gulf from Cameron, Louisiana.
Right.
And it was quite an experience. I took a trip on a work boat to get out there. It took me 3 hours. I was seasick, and everybody else on the boat was seasick. And we arrive at the rig, and I have brand new apparel. You know, I have brand new work clothes, brand new helmet. I had long hair at the time. And so I show up on the rig, and I stuck out like a sore thumb because virtually everyone else on the rig was a Cajun except for me, being in southern Louisiana.
Right.
And so, you know, it was, they didn't like me, obviously, day one. And we got in the first night in the shower, they started shoving me back and forth.
Oh!
And so I'm thinking, you know what? I'm 80 miles out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
People die on these oil rigs all the time.
Right.
And I better take care of myself here. So I was a wrestler. I was pretty tough. And so I started fighting back. And so, you know what? They respected that.
Right.
I mean, I really thought literally my life might have been on the line. So they respected that. And we actually became friends. And so that was the way the whole experience began.
All right. Hold it. I love this.
And unbelievably dangerous.
This is what it takes. You know, your father knew that you needed to have some of that grittiness. And I hope you know that now at this point in your life. And what happens is we tend to overprotect our children. We don't want them to go through what you went through, which helped to give you that character. All right, hang tight. We're going to talk to you on the side of this quick break here. You're listening to the story of Tom Murray. He's the former CEO of Calvin Klein. He's written a new book. It'll be coming out soon. We'll talk about that. And what is that grittiness that has helped him to be a success in his life? This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly, Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere. Check out our website also, entrepreneur.com. We do this every week. That's why they call it Entrepreneur Weekly. We talk to CEOs, founders, entrepreneurs about their stories of their secret sauce of their success. And it's no longer a secret anymore because it's not the secret sauce because they're sharing it with you. Like Tom Murray, you can find out more about Tom at tommurray.com, M-U-R-R-Y. TomMurray.com. All right, so you, interestingly enough, by the way, the old days when I was in high school and I played water polo, similar thing happened to me. I was a sophomore, and all of a sudden, you know, here we are in the showers, a bunch of crazy guys, and, you know, something happened, and one of the guys shoved, and then they started laughing, and I thought to myself, this is going nowhere fast. And guess what? I basically was prepared to kill. I'm like, all right, anybody touches me, you're dying today. And, you know, but what happens is they respected me. Now I, you know, they're not going to mess with me. Same in the pool. I realized if I'm going to play water polo, it's a really intense sport, by the way. I needed to be tough, but I also, you know, that wasn't really my nature. I was a nice guy. And so I think at some point at that moment in time, I realized if you don't defend yourself in this world, you're going to go down. And so that's kind of where you were. You made that choice to defend yourself. You got the respect of the other men. Take it from there.
Yeah, so that was a big turning point, obviously, on the rig. I went from being totally unaccepted to being accepted and to being one of them. So I won them over, and that was a big deal. And then I went to work. And it was by far the hardest work I've ever done, had ever done, and ever physical work I've done since. It was just unbelievable. So I was a roustabout working on the tender, which is an old Navy ship attached to the rig, and we were all roustabouts that worked on the rig. And so they gave me a job of sandblasting the tender. And it was about 110 degrees out there in the Gulf. And so I stood for probably 12 hours a day with my arms up in the air, wearing a deep sea diver's outfit or suit to protect me from the sand.
Oh, man.
And I would be sandblasting this tender. And that would go on, as I said, for about 12 hours. It was just unbelievable. And then I would go, you know, be off work and go to bed and so on. And then if a work boat came in, didn't matter what time it was, could have been 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we roustabouts would be up to unload that work boat. What we would do is we would put the casing that was on the work boat into storage on the tender, and, you know, casing are those iron long poles, the tubes, right, whatever, they go into the ground that house the drill bit. So it was just unbelievable in terms of physical labor, in terms of lack of sleep. But I ended up making good friends out there. I learned a lot about teamwork, and because it was so dangerous, you know, you were part of a team and you had to kind of watch out for each other. So that went on for a summer, in, you know, summer from college, and I'll never forget it. And then I went back to college.
Man. Well, I mean, but it's funny. If you think about it now, you were like, what, they call you a haberdasher, right? And you go from that to being what you called a roustabout on an oil rig. But in that one summer, you took something with you that probably lasted for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah, no question about it. And to your point earlier, my dad, there was a method to the madness of my dad, because I was a privileged kid, and I was never in the military because I was sole surviving son. My first father was killed in the Korean War, so my second father, who turned out to be an amazing individual, I couldn't have been luckier. He probably thought I needed a little discipline, to your earlier point.
Right.
And there was no place better than to get some discipline than an offshore drilling rig. I think if he had realized how dangerous it was, I'm not sure he would have sent me. But it worked out great.
But, you know, it's funny. So I have some kids right now. My youngest is 19, and he is working for a very similar thing, a well drilling outfit. They drill wells for water.
Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, and it's dangerous. It's a lot of hard work. It doesn't matter what the weather is. The work has to continue on, because if somebody's well goes down, they got no water. They can't take a shower. They can't eat. They can't drink. I mean, they're in a rough shape, especially if a storm's going on. But he has learned more in the last 6 months of his life and complains about it all the time, but he doesn't quit. Because I know he knows he's getting character, he's learning skills, and that grittiness that you talk about is what's going to carry him for the rest of his life as well. When we come back, we're going to talk about you being the CEO of Calvin Klein, and that's a big, big change from an oil rig. We'll be right back. We'll talk more with Tom Murray. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So what can we learn from Tom Murray, former CEO of Calvin Klein, a man who was an oil derrick worker out in the Louisiana ocean out there in the Gulf. Is that the Gulf? I think it's the Gulf.
That's the Gulf, yeah.
And I personally, honestly, will say this to you. Had you not had that experience, you would not be the man you are today. So people, when you have these experiences where you think to yourself, this is hell, the answer is, yes, it may be. But the old saying is, if you're going through hell, keep going, because sometimes you got to pass through hell, right, Tom?
Yeah, that's a good saying.
So how then do you go from, you know, the oil rig back to school and explain how you became the CEO of Calvin Klein? That's a pretty big step.
Well, yeah, it really was a big step. And, you know, it really was my dream job, but I was always in fashion one way or the other. I mean, aside from the oil rig experience. You know, I worked in, as I said earlier, I worked in men's clothing stores after school and during the summers in high school. And then during college, I did the same thing. And I just kept doing that. I ended up getting them at Oklahoma State University. I got a major in psychology and a minor in marketing, which served me well. And so, you know, I had various jobs sales jobs in the apparel industry. And I just kept going. And so ultimately I ended up at Calvin Klein. I wasn't originally the CEO. I was a COO. And, you know, I ended up being there for about 19 years, 17 years of which I was the CEO. And, you know, fortunately we were able to grow that business from $2.8 billion to $8 billion. And so that was, you know, a great achievement. And I'll never forget it. And it was the job of a lifetime. I had the opportunity to work with Calvin Klein, the designer, the individual, for 8 years. I worked closely with him. I'll never forget that. I was able to learn from him, and that was just outstanding. Not too many people have that opportunity. I'll never forget that. Mm. And so that was pretty much it. You know, I just stayed there for all that period of time and had an amazing career. I retired the first quarter of 2015. And, I mean, I can get into more detail over the period of 17 years, well, but that was,
you know,
that was it.
What I'm more interested in, I think, than all the detail is now that we can drill down into what do you think were the core, just things like, you know, the core, how do I want to say this? What was the core of your success? I mean, what did you do that led to such success? I mean, from just under $3 billion to $8 billion is a huge jump. But now you must have implemented certain things company-wide to make sure that everybody was towing the rope that you put out to sea, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I have to attribute the success to my team. I had an amazing team, most of which were hired by Calvin and I when he was still there. And so, you know, they were all intact. And, you know, I've always been a really believed in team player, team culture and all of that. So I had this amazing team of people. We worked very well together. We worked very hard. We enjoyed each other. And that, as I said before, I think teamwork and team culture is the main reason for my success. Now, I did have, a high taste level. I love fashion. I always worked in it one way or the other. And so that was a combination of that and working closely with a team. And also, I love my work. So I worked very hard. I worked long hours, never really thought about it because I just loved what I did. And, you know, title of my book, A Great Fit. But it turned out that that job was a great fit, which is what enabled me to excel and do as well as I did.
Mm-hmm. So I see here I have a couple little notes. Gratitude, patience, and integrity are the key to thriving and inspiring others in your career. Now, I'm curious, you know, that time on the oil rig when you were having to really, you know, go through hell, as we called it a minute ago, you know, along that path and then after that, you went to college and you worked your tail off. Where was it that you found these virtues, gratitude, patience, and integrity? I mean, I'm just curious, when you said that aha moment of, I know what it's going to take, or I better damn well do this right the first time.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it was an aha moment as much as it was just a long-term commitment to those principles of, you know, working hard. I was always a hard worker. I learned that from my father. And like I said to you earlier, I've always had jobs since I was 15 years old. And most of the time back then, I had two jobs. So I always worked very, very hard. And so I adhered to that. I'm a pretty good student of human nature. And I think that was innate. I'm not really sure that you learn that. I think you're kind of born with it. And you're able to maybe perfect it over time.
Right.
But the combination, I had kind of born with taste. And
yeah. All right.
All that.
Hold tight. What we'll do is we'll come back after this break and we'll have some tips from Tom to be a great team player. And it's kind of fun taking these little journeys. You know, so much of this reminds me of my life and you guys listening out there, yours too, I'm sure. This is Entrepreneur Weekly. We'll be right back.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today.
Need a mentor? One-on-one online sessions with Entrepreneur Magazine's experts can help you start a business, grow your business, build your brand, fundraise, and more. Book your one-on-one session with experienced business owners and media experts. Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, can help you perfect your business pitch to media. Businesswoman Kathleen Griffith, founder of Grace & Company, can help improve your growth and marketing strategies. Need guidance on improving your leadership skills? Elizabeth Gore, president of Alice, can help you become a strong, value-driven leader. So what are you waiting for? Book your one-on-one session with Entrepreneur's lineup of experts today. Visit entrepreneur.com/mentors. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/mentors.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, he goes from being an oil rig worker in Louisiana to the CEO of Calvin Klein, from just under $3 billion worth of business to $8 billion worth of business. His name is Tom Murray. He was a former CEO of Calvin Klein. TomMurray.com. Tom, it's time now for you to distill all of this life all the way to your retirement now, enjoying life. As I talked to him in the commercial break, he's wearing shorts, playing golf, going to church, living life to its best. And congratulations for that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's nice to hear these stories because, you know, it's like we don't know who's at the top of these companies. We buy their clothes and wear them, you know, proudly as if you're a fashionista the way some days I am when I'm on television. Otherwise, I'm in, like you, T-shirt and shorts. But I worked with Regis Philbin on Live with Regis and Kelly, and I still do with Ryan Seacrest and Kelly Ripa.
Okay.
And whenever I go on, it's like, oh, my, I have to go out and buy new stuff. And it's a fun thing. Dressing up is fun. Women do it all the time, but men don't always get to do that. They get these fun jobs, and sometimes they get, you know, it's fun because they don't have to dress up. I love that. Right. I don't have, I mean, radio, I'm in my underwear and a tank top right now. No, I'm not actually, but you know what I'm saying? Nobody sees me until I'm on TV. Right. But one day Regis says to his haberdasher, his in-house guy, he says, Rosie, go get Alan a sash. Alan needs a sash. And I'm like, a sash. Well, then, what do you think? I never went on that show without a sash again, you know? So it was just kind of fun. All right. So we're going to drill down now into the secret sauce of your success. And if you could distill that down into three good points for people, what would they be, Tom?
Well, I think the most important thing is to find a job that's a great fit. You got to find a job that you love, that you're good at, and then you enjoy doing. It's not really work then. It's just fun. And then secondly, I think you have to surround yourself with people that have a lot of talent, that are team players. And that's really a very important component to my success. I was always surrounded by talented people that were team players. And I really supported them. They supported me. We had fun together. It wasn't work. We worked hard. We worked long hours, but it wasn't work. It was fun. And I think that, you know, the last thing that comes to mind in my whole career is keep going. Because there are going to be good times, going to be bad times, and it's going to be tough at times. And other times it's going to be easy. But I think if you just remember, keep going. That's a really important component to my success.
That's right. You know, it's funny with a lot of young kids, you know, in my life. And of course, when I say young, we're talking my oldest is 30 and my youngest is going to be 20. So as they were growing up, they were playing all these video games, and I used to always yell at them. But the one thing I learned from those video games was the closer you get to the jackpot, you might say, there's more zombies. And if there's more zombies attacking you, you're getting actually close because you're on track. And you got to realize that in life, when life gets tough and there's more zombies attacking you, you're actually on the right course. Life's going to be tough, right?
I think that's a great analogy.
All right. Now, you mentioned just now a book. So your book coming out next year, 2019, what's that going to be called and what's it going to be about?
It's called A Great Fit. And it's about my life. It's not just about the Calvin Klein period, but it's about my whole life. It's a life story. And of course, 17 years at CEO of Calvin is a very important component, but it's kind of how I got there. It's a little bit of what we talked about, but obviously it's fill a book. So it's a lot more than that. So I think that the readers will find it compelling. The people that have read it have said to me that it's a page turner, so hopefully they're right.
Well, fantastic. I wish you the best of luck with that. Let me know when it comes out. I'd love to get a copy, and we'll tell the world it's out there. It'll be Murray's life story, and you know, this has already been a little taste of what that is. TomMurray.com, MURRY. And Tom, good job. Keep up the good work, and can't wait to have you back on when your book comes out.
Thanks very much, Alan. It's a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you. See, it takes a little bit of grit, you guys, no matter who you are out there in this world. Even guys like Tom, CEO of Calvin Klein, he was on his journey and had to pass through hell just like the rest of us. Some passed through hell a couple of times, and I'm sure there were days when it felt like hell for him too. But like he said, just keep going. We'll be right back. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
You know, I like disruptors. I am a disruptor. Of course, that's what I do. I work for Entrepreneur Magazine. Another person who writes for Entrepreneur.com and had an actual Facebook video series on Entrepreneur's Facebook page, Disruptors Unite, is Dr. Patty Fletcher. And she is on the line with us right now. Disruptors, unite! There we go. How you doing, Patty?
I'm great, thank you. And you know what? I could never say the name Disruptors Unite without, like, raising my fist in a power thing. So I'm hoping that you're doing that, Alan.
You know, I did. I was, like, fist pumping.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
So first of all, you've got a lot going on here. I don't even know where to begin. You know, best-selling author, and, you know, we'll go through all that stuff. But first of all, entrepreneurs are not regular folks, are they? I mean, there's something in the DNA. It's like if you go take a DNA test, they look at it, they scratch their head, and they go, "Well, part Cherokee Indian, I can see that. Part Irish, part this, part." But what is this part, right? It's a big chunk, too, like 15%, you know? It's like, it's the DNA of an entrepreneur. You know what I mean?
And I do.
It's different.
They're a special kind of crazy, and they're proud of it. Yep.
So tell us, first of all, you just got done with your doing a whole series with Entrepreneur on their Facebook page, on our Facebook. It's, you know, listen, we're all a tribe, right? Disruptors Unite. What was that about for those? Because it's, you know, it's like something I want to just get started with where you've been, where you are, and where you're going. So where you've been. Yeah, go for it.
So about the show, so disruptors, it's probably helpful to talk about what a disruptor is. And when you think about entrepreneurs, it sounds like the same way I do. It's not a job. It's a state of mind.
Right.
And so disruptors in every entrepreneur, whether they are a startup founder or they work in their community or they work for a large company, it doesn't really matter. What they have in common is that they see a status quo that no longer serves the world in which it lives. It's inefficient. It's ineffective. It's awful. And they can't stop until they take that status quo and create a new one, one that is more efficient, more effective, more friendly. And so the challenge around being a female entrepreneur is, one, the deck is stacked against you from a system perspective, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. That's what the book Disruptors is about, which was published by Entrepreneur Press, came out in January, and it's been on the publisher's list since it came out. It's really,
fantastic,
really difficult for women.
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right? Well, it's good timing, Alan, right? And it's definitely a topic that not just women, but men as well. Not everybody leads the same way. Not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. It just doesn't quite work that way.
Right.
So that's right. So that's incredibly difficult to be a disruptor. And you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. The other challenge is, if you are, so not just in the corporate world, and we can talk those numbers, but if you are a startup founder who brings your disruption to life that way, if you are a woman, you only receive 2% of external funding. Men receive 98% of all external funding for their businesses. And so we're still in this phenomenon phase with female disruptors and raising them to the top. And instead of calling out and saying, "Hey, look, there's a woman and she's a disruptor," the show, the column I write for Entrepreneur, the other writing I do, the speaking I do, is really about just telling the story about disruption. And oh, by the way, it just so happens to be a female who's at the lead.
Right.
And that's really the kind of place we want to go to, right? So that when I think of a disruptor, I just don't think about the young boy in a hoodie. I want to think about really anybody who brings it to the surface.
You know, it's funny. My son-in-law, who is 25, you know, this morning he was talking about a lady that he's working with, and he goes, "Man, she is on fire. She's got this, and she does that, and she started this business, and she did that." And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, who is this lady? You know, it's almost like for a while it was almost taboo for women to be just on game like that. You know what I mean? But today, it's almost like, you know, hell yes, right? It's like, disruptors unite. I'm punching, fist bumping. You know what I'm saying? And listen, the women in my world, you know, my wife included, who recently has decided to kind of have this born again, but not on a religious way, but as a woman in business. Because, you know, she was a soccer mom forever and ever and ever. And I always thought, you know, my wife just doesn't like business. And it's okay, I'm an entrepreneur, but she doesn't like business. You know, and all of a sudden she's like flying here and going there and dealing with contractors. And last night she goes, "Yeah, I got there at midnight and I had to have the guy who's painting the house come and pick me up at the airport." I'm like, is that okay? It's like, I've turned into the soccer mom all of a sudden. It's I love seeing my wife do this. I love seeing my daughter, who is an entrepreneur. I love seeing women come out of their shell. For so long, you folks, you women, have been kind of, you know, pigeonholed as, you know, soccer moms, housewives, you know, women. But today, it just seems like that, man, women really have their game going. I don't know what it is.
The truth is, we have been all along, and we're seeing a lot of revisionist history kind of come to light, right? So, you know, starting with the mission to Mars, right? And we saw, we all, many of us saw the movie where
fantastic movie, right?
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, I'm all in. Right, so we're seeing some of that, but you're absolutely right. And what you're talking about is really what the book Disruptors is about. So I'm sure you've heard of the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg,
right.
And that, right, that came out a few years ago, and I loved that she brought this topic of women in the workforce to the forefront. It's not been a mainstream topic. I've been booed off stages. I've had hate emails. I've had all these things. Cause it was, oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Wow.
Please bring it on. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm. And so, and by the way, I deserved some of it. But you know, talk about disruptor. I learned the hard way, Alan. That's how I roll. So,
awesome.
So leaning comes in. But the truth is, I didn't like the book. And I didn't like the book because essentially what it said was, hey, women, in order to compete with the big boys, in order to have this amazing career in the corner office, the book made assumptions that, one, every woman wants to be in the corner office. Well, not every person does. It just doesn't work that way. There's not one definition of success. And the next thing is, the reason that we are not all out in the C-suite, in high-growth entrepreneurship, and all these things that we're told we should do, or even fulfilling our own dreams, where, oh, my God, you can be a soccer mom and sit in a boardroom? Holy crap, like back up the bus, right? That it's our fault, right? That we have to be fixed in order to be able to do this. In other words, there are all of these programs out there. Trillions of dollars are spent on this topic, trillions, and the needle keeps going the other way. And it goes the other way because instead of looking at why the heck we in a world where more than 50% of the population are women, more than 50% of the workforce are women, we're in this country, women control 51% of the wealth, right? More than half of PhDs, more than half of MBAs, blah, 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 70% of valedictorians. We have all this spending power. We're responsible for 70 to 80% of all consumer buy decisions, right? So we have all this power. We're not in power. The answer cannot be to blame and shame men. That doesn't work. And it can't be to fix women. And the truth is, if I leaned in any more, my freaking face would hit the ground. And so when I hear, because it's true, could your wife lean in anymore?
Not right now. No. Not right this moment. Oh,
and you
God.
Better say no, because you will have to see her when you get off this radio. So, right. So it's really like, I grew up in enterprise software. I grew up at SAP, and that taught me how to look at things from a system perspective, because that's really what SAP, the enterprise software company, brought to the market, the founder of enterprise resource planning. So it's what companies use to run the business. I think that SAP has something like 70% of the world's transactions run on that company. So it basically says, here's the system. Now we have a bunch of processes that are automated, and now they're digitalized. Fine.
All right. Hold it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got to take a break. You're killing me. This is, you are some kind of special. No wonder Entrepreneur likes you so much. Dr. Patty Fletcher, her book, Disruptors. We're going to talk to her and get some more great advice for you women and us men on the other side. Don't go anywhere. Sugar and spice.
Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
She's on fire! Yes, she is. Dr. Patty Fletcher, Doc. We're going to call her Doc, author of best-selling book, Disruptors. Success stories from women who break the mold. She knows because she broke it. There's no mold. There is no mold. Anyway. You're so funny. So here's what I need from you. We got about 5 minutes before this show comes to a close for the week. Here's what it boils down to. The nail that sticks up gets hammered down. So we want to be disruptors. We want to stand out, but we also don't want to get hammered down. How is it that a woman or a man can be in the business world today and be disruptors, but not so much that we get our heads lopped off or we get hammered down from speaking out? Got any advice?
I do. Yes, I do.
I figured you would.
Yeah. Every hammer is looking for a nail, right?
Yep.
So the first thing is, don't be ego-driven. Be purpose-driven. So go out there and ask yourself, what needs to change? Because that's what a disruptor does. What could be different? What could be better? Look for inefficiencies, ineffectiveness. Trust me, we all live imperfect lives. So just look around you at business, at the office. So that's number one. Be focused on the purpose, not on what your position is or your money is. Yes, I know. But truthfully, that will follow. Nobody's going to buy into your ego. They are going to buy into a purpose that they can also share. The next thing is to look at why, right? So as a, think about it as a system. This inequity is here, whatever that inequity is, whatever the disruption is. Why does it exist? Really delve into the why and dissect it. Talk to people. Find out who know about the topic. Where did this come from? Why does it exist? What are some of the alternatives? Who else is looking at this in the market? And that really forces a very distinct kind of decision-making. It's called relational decision-making. When you are a disruptor, you have to remember that no one gets to the finish line alone, right? Because if you are disrupting something, you're in the business world, brick buildings don't do business with brick buildings. People do business with people, and you have to enable people to help you. So you're going to go out there, you're going to talk to the people who you believe have the biggest stake in the disruption you're going to create. And if you work in a company, they're probably going to be competing products, competing initiatives that's going to impact customers. Go out there, talk. Get them to understand what your vision is. Allow them, enable them to put their own footprint on it because you need them to help you. And by the way, you're going to face barriers. And look at every barrier, whatever that might be, as a strategy waiting to happen. And then the final piece is remembering that you are a transformational leader. You are someone who's creating a new vision and enabling the people around you to create that vision, make it a reality. And when you're a transformational leader, you understand that the power is not actually in your hands. Leaders are not leaders unless followers enable them to be. And if you follow those three different mindsets and practices, all of a sudden your disruption, which, by the way, is really hard, and like every good entrepreneur, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, it's not going to be so lonely. And you'll be able to cover the gaps in who you don't know and what you don't know in order to achieve that new vision.
Website where people can get your book, Disruptors.
Just Dr. Patty, P-A-T-T-I, Fletcher.com/disruptors, which is with an E-R-S at the end. You can also look for it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, whatever. So it's drpattyfletcher.com/disruptors.
Twitter, P-K Fletcher, Facebook, Dr. Patty Fletcher, book, Disruptors. Success stories from women who break the mold. You have definitely broken the mold. So I'm sitting here as I'm one of those weird old school radio guys. This is a nationally syndicated show, and then it goes to podcast. And I'm going, what song should I pick for this lady? And I'm thinking Billy Joel, Uptown Girl. And I go, no. I think Living on a Prayer from Bon Jovi. Because so many people feel like when we try to be disruptors, even though we know we got to say what we've got to say, our heart is exploding, we're living on a prayer because really faith is the only thing we've got in that moment. So that's what I'm playing for you on the way out. A little Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. Dr. Patty Fletcher, you rock, lady. You rock! Disruptors,
you rock! Favorite song ever. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. You need to be on more often, so we'll hook up and have you on and do some of this stuff. I'm Alan Taylor. That's right. She's Dr. Patty Fletcher, and we will both see you in the world of Entrepreneur, entrepreneur.com. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.